Leave the high-gloss spin doctors at home. It's time to enter the fray. It's time to converge with the Culture Kitch. Joining me today, celebrity chef and restaurant owner, New York City's very own Bobby Flay. So stay tuned to the Culture Kitch.
In Napoli, where love is king, when boy meets girl, here's what they say.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore. When the world seems to shine like you've had too much wine, that's amore. Bells will ring, ting-a-ling-a-ling, ting-a-ling-a-ling, and you'll sing Vita Bella. Hearts will play tippy-tippy-tay, tippy-tippy-tay, like a guitarandella.
When the stars make you drool just like pasta fazool,
that's amore.
That's amore.
When you dance down the street with the cloud at your feet, you're in love. When you walk in a dream, but you know you're not dreaming, signore. Excuse me, but you see, back in old Napoli, that's amore.
Joining me today on the Culture Kitch is celebrity chef, entrepreneur, book writer, busy guy, Bobby Flay. Bobby, welcome to the Culture Kitch.
Thanks, good to be here.
Favorite food scene in a movie?
Favorite food scene in a movie? Oh, mostly Martha. Have you seen it?
Never saw it.
German film, fantastic. I watch it all the time. It's a foreign film, obviously, German film. And basically the whole movie is one big giant food orgy. I mean, it's the food there is just beautiful.
Like Babette's Feast?
Yeah, Babette's Feast is a good movie. Like Water for Chocolate. Big Night. The Big Night, the very last scene where the brothers are sort of mad at each other, and one of the brothers goes in and makes an omelet.
Makes a frittata.
He makes it. There's no cut in the in the movie, so it's one whole, it's just one scene,
right,
nonstop, right. You know, live to tape or whatever you want to call it, and it was, he did a perfect job. It was, and, you know, and nobody said a word. Like, there was no speaking, the food did the speaking. So that was awesome.
Yeah, I asked my wife when we got married. I said, "That's what I want. I want the suckling pig. I want the big night spread." And Jamie, who you know from the Globe,
right,
did that up for us. It was like,
really?
The best, yeah, it was the best wedding gift I think,
wow,
I received.
That's true. That so that was for your wedding?
Yeah.
Oh, no, it was for your
wedding. For our wedding,
okay.
The reception, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Is dinner music appropriate?
Dinner music is appropriate sometimes. I mean, you know, it depends on the mood and the scene and who you're with and what's happening. First of all, I don't think it's ever a bad idea. I think the right kind of music is a better idea, and that's always hard to do if there's a lot of people there. You know, usually if I'm making dinner at home on a Sunday night, my wife will say, "Okay, cool, so can we start the football game off now and put on some music?" Like, no problem. I've already watched 8 hours of it. I can go into some music at this point.
Giants or Jets?
I'm a Giant fan.
Okay, all right. So, I mean, like, obviously, barbecue music is going to be a little bit different than having three to five couples over for dinner. What's your favorite kind of, like, if you're setting a scene, like a private dinner at your home,
who's your musician or artist of choice?
You mean at home, like indoors kind of thing?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. I would say that I like soul for sort of, you know, soul has a good sense of, you know, obviously has great rhythm to it, has a good, most of the time has a good beat, but it's also soothing at the same time, so it's not like, you know, head banging, or, you know, it's not, you know, rip-roaring hip-hop or anything like that. I think, like, rhythm and blues, soul is a good thing, like Aretha Franklin, you know, anything with the Motown sound to it, I think that's good. That's my kind of music.
I took you for maybe a little Frank on some occasions.
I like Frank.
I know, it's that New York thing, you know.
No. I'm a big Frank Sinatra fan. However, the problem with Frank Sinatra is that he becomes the star of the show, no matter what, whether he's in the room or he's on your, you know, CD player. So
yeah. Do you try any new recipes on Friends? Do you invite them over and say, like, I got something I'm thinking about hatching at one of my restaurants?
Always. You know, when I'm opening up a new restaurant, we just opened Bar American. You know, it's like, I, you know, eat, breathe, and sleep what the menu's going to be, you know, for 6 months beforehand. And, you know, sometimes the dishes in your head don't always, you know, make it to the menu because they sound, I think they sound better than they actually come out on the plate. But, you know, my wife is a really good tester. She's a great eater. So, that's been a really good thing about our
marriage.
She's
a litmus test. She can say, Bobby, this is not working.
She'll just say, you know what? I've had better things that you've made. She's very diplomatic.
Wow, okay.
But I truly do trust her palate.
Great. That's very good. When you first started out, you went to the Culinary Institute, correct?
French Culinary Institute.
French Culinary. What was that like? Was that intimidating for a guy from New York? Had you had some kitchen experience, a lot of it? You got kind of thrown into the, you know, the wolves?
I was very young. I mean, I was 18 years old, maybe 19 at the time. And I had been working at a restaurant right after high school, so I had a little sense of what the business was like. I mean, I didn't really know what I was doing. I thought I knew what I was doing, but I didn't have any idea what I was doing. And I wasn't really intimidated because I was too young and stupid to know it. You know, it's the people that I was in school with were older than I was. I think the next youngest person was 25, and then it went up to, you know, probably 50. A lot of times in culinary school, it's either, you know, a second or third profession. You know, of course, there are cases where people come out of high school or college and go right to culinary school. However, a lot of times it's at least a second career move. And so most of the time, the people there are much more, you know, mature than, sort of a regular university or college. And so I lacked maturity. However, I was so interested in it, so it really kept me focused.
What was the biggest lesson you came out of that school with as a chef that kind of...
You know, it proved to me, and I tell people all the time now who want to go into the business, is that, you know, a lot of times people say to me, I want to go into the restaurant business and I want to cook and you know, do I have to go to school? Well, the answer is, do you have to go to school? No. But it's going to give you the basics of cooking. French technique is the basis of most cooking. And if you have that, then you can use that basically for the rest of your career to derive different things. I mean, I have a Southwestern restaurant, I have a Spanish restaurant, and I have an American restaurant. And I employ my basic French technique every single day. I mean, it's just the way things are done. And so if you have that under your belt and you know it very well, everything else really becomes about creativity.
And how about translating that into celebrityhood, being on TV? Was that a tough transition? Did you go to them? Did they come to you with a cooking show idea?
Well, I've been on the Food Network for a long time. You know, it's been like, I don't know, 10 or 11 years. And believe me, when the Food Network first came in the air, nobody cared. Nobody wanted to watch it. I think it actually came on in New York at 1 o'clock in the morning. From like 1 to 7, so you really had to be dedicated to want to watch that. And they had no money, you know. It was a brand new cable network, and so basically they were just looking for people locally who could jump into a taxi in New York and come to, you know, and be on the air. And so you know, at that point, it was sort of like, it was kind of fun for me. I never thought of it as another part of my career. And then slowly but surely, you know, things sort of, you know, the Food Network grew. You know, they helped me grow with them, you know, on air. They let me do and try different things. And, you know, it's 10 or 11 years later, and so I'm still there. So it's been great. The Food Network has been a great thing.
How do you balance, like, three restaurants, a family, and all of that?
It's hard. I mean, there's no magic to it. You just have to, you know, my schedule is, like, down to the minute. You know, it's like, you know, an hour for this, an hour and a half for that, 2 hours for this, and you know, that just includes my business, you know. And then there's my family. I have a daughter who's 9 years old who lives in Connecticut. You know, I'm newly married. And so, you know, balancing all those things are hard to do, but, you know, it's just a matter of doing it. And you have to make time for it.
Did you identify with any of the celebrity chefs when you were kind of thinking, like, remember the Galloping Gourmet?
Yeah.
Obviously Julia Child.
I mean, Julia Child, of course, you know, she's legendary, or, you know, is legendary, I should say. And she's, you know, she was a great friend to all of us in the business. She was a very supportive person. She never considered herself like this great chef that would run a restaurant, because that's not really what she was. She was really a woman who used French technique to teach people at home, mostly at that time women, housewives, how to cook things, you know, in the sort of simplest way. And she gave America a sense of cuisine that we never had before. The Galloping Gourmet brought a little flair to the table, so to speak. And one of the things I love that he does, and I'm going to employ this in one of my shows one day, is he's got this audience, and at the end of the audience, he picks out, like, the finest girl in the audience and brings her up and sits down and eats with her. But you know what? There was always, like, the sense of who's going to get picked at the end of the show.
Right.
It was a little touch. It had nothing really to do with about what he was doing or who he was. But it was just about, like, as the credits were rolling, it was, like, that one thing, and I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, then kind of a Bond kind of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, I could see you doing that. Chefs, I mean, there's so much overlay now in the media with celebrity. Are you more recognized for your food today or as a celebrity? And does it matter to you?
I think it's both. And that's the thing that's difficult for me to balance. It's a really good question. You know, I get recognized in the street more because people see me on television, but they see me on television because I'm doing something with food. So it's not like they see me on television because I'm doing a reality show about something I have nothing to do with. I really try to keep my, you know, my life focused on the most important thing, you know, besides my family, which is food to me. It's how I make my living. It's a thing that gets me sort of, you know, jazzed up to go to work every single day. And so if I'm able to take food and cook it in the restaurant, feed people and my customers, at the same time, do the same thing on television, and have both of them working for each other. That's, to me, that's been a really good accomplishment.
What's been your most memorable meal you've served to maybe a public figure or celebrity?
A celebrity?
Or maybe a politician? Or...
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we've had them all. You know, at some point, you know, Mesa Grill's been open for 15 years, so over a 15-year period, you feel like, you know, and Bolo's been open for 11 years. So I've had these two restaurants that have been open for a really long time. And, you know, at some point, it seems like every sort of known public figure comes to the restaurant for one reason or the other. I mean, I'll tell you, I like, you know, my favorite kind of celebrities are, you know, I like, this is going to sound really weird, but I like the guys that tell us what's going on in the world. Like, so to me, you know, we've now lost the three guys who, for my generation, it seems like we lost them in a split second this year where they just left the air. And obviously, we lost Peter Jennings.
Right.
We lost Peter Jennings, period. But, you know, Dan Rather and Tom Brokaw, like, I'm a huge news junkie, and I get up in the morning and I watch the news implicitly. Like, I am all over the news. And so when those guys, like, Dan Rather would come to the restaurant, he would actually call me from the desk, okay, like right after his newscast was over and say, can I come and pick up some pumpkin soup? And he'd come himself and stand at the front of the restaurant, and I would make some pumpkin soup for him, and he'd take it away. I mean, like, that's, to me, that's like a great moment,
yeah,
you know?
I mean,
we've had all these other, you know, starlets and, you know, very good actors and stuff like that. Those people who I respect their work a lot doesn't get me as excited as somebody like that.
Cooper Anderson, how about him? Do you think he's going to be the new guard?
Definitely.
You know, he was crying on air. I thought that was incredibly touching for a newscaster.
Well, you know what? I think that, you know, actually, he interviewed me about 3 or 4 years ago for some Iron Chef thing. He came when he was just sort of working at CNN. And, one of the things he did, obviously, for the hurricane is, it was so much coverage. But I found myself going to watch him and looking forward to his show coming on 360, is that what it was called?
Yeah.
Okay. And because I felt like he had dug himself in,
right.
You know, there is a lot of drama now in news, you know, with the newscasters and on and on and on, and everybody's trying to separate themselves left and right. But I just feel like he's got a good sense of it, and I feel like he'd be the same person on air as he was if he was sitting here talking to us right now.
Yeah.
And so I relate to him. You know, I feel like I can relate to him. To me, he could be like the new guard of, you know, of who we listen to on TV.
You make a valid point, because we have, the old guard is gone, and who are these new guys? And, you know, you're right, the news has become a charade. And, you know, big business does control the networks, and it's very political.
Well, you know, like fortunately or unfortunately, depending on what side of the road you are on, the news and entertainment obviously has just become one. You know, it's meshed together. You know, up until, let's say, 5 years ago, there was a clear division between news and entertainment, and the lines have blurred.
Probably all the reality shows have had a lot to do with it. I think
somewhat.
People just, you know, we've seen everything, and how far can you go? Are we gonna? Is it like wag the dog now? We're just gonna start fabricating stories.
Right. I don't know.
I don't know. This is something I don't know, and I get a lot of people don't know. What's it like cooking on a TV set?
You mean on the actual set itself?
Yeah, on the set, because you always go like, well, you know, there's a lot of prep work going in, because you're grabbing stuff out and you're getting ready. But, you know, like pretty much the grilling show, we see what we're getting, and you're on the grill. But
yeah.
I mean, in a real, you know.
Well, there's a lot of behind the scenes stuff that you don't see. There's a whole kitchen staff that actually the Food Network. And I'm not just saying this because, you know, I feel like I have to. They are fantastic cooks behind the scenes, and they really organize things incredibly well. However, I don't cook television food. And what I mean by that is my food, I want my food to taste good. Because whether it's an audience or it's the cameraman who I'm going to feed or, you know, whoever it is or a guest, I want it to be good. And to me, it takes just as much effort to make it taste good as it does to not make it taste good. And so I cook through the breaks. Like, I make sure that the food is... I'm always cooking on the set. I basically don't leave the set, and I just cook right through it.
Oh, man, the staff loves you, man. The camera guys and the audio guys are loving you.
You know what? That stuff goes a long way.
It really
does. You
got
to feed the crew.
Yeah, you do. You know, it was interesting. A couple of years ago, I interviewed... And this is leading to another question. I interviewed Tori Amos. And we were talking about food on the road. And, you know, I've done some minor tours. And my wife came with me once. She was then my girlfriend. And she was amazed that here we were in the heartland of America, and there were no food options, because you get outside of New York and you forget. You really got to search for those great little mom and pop stands.
Absolutely.
And if you're stuck in a place you don't know anything, there's a Denny's, there's a couple of fast food places. Why is that, you know, quality food is hard to find? Have we just become fat, like fast food nation? Is it?
You know what? I've traveled the whole country through food. I did a show for the Food Network called Food Nation. And I did 112 half hours on food around this country. And what we would do is we'd pick a place, and we would try to discover the food culture of that particular place. So it could be Savannah, Georgia, or it could be Lexington, Kentucky, whatever it is. And I was faced with the exact same thing that you're talking about. And my crew, you know, the camera guys and the audio guys and all that, like they were happy just to like find the next McDonald's.
Yeah.
And they could easily find it. And I would say, look, here's the deal. I'm not eating there. You guys can eat there. I'm not eating. Like, I'm going to find something else. Even if it's a diner that I know the food is actually prepared on the premises where they could actually crack the egg and put it on the griddle and put it between a piece of toast, to me, that's way better than eating fast food. And so I think that when you say it's hard for us to find, you know, home cooked meals, I think it's really the real truth is that it's easier to find fast food places because they're everywhere,
right?
You know, and they're just so in your face, and they have all the money to spend to advertise, to, you know, put up the right signs, and the mom and pop places, you know, have to compete with that. So if I could give anybody advice out there, like, hold out, like, for the place that you can find.
Go off the, you know, go a couple of miles off the interstate and you'll find them.
Well, all you have to do is ask the guy at the local gas station. He's going to tell you where he eats breakfast. Right. It's not going to be McDonald's.
Right. Very good point. And which, you know, also all of these rock and rollers are on the road now bringing chefs with them. You know, you find that more and more. They're like, look, man, I can afford it. I'm going to bring, you know, I'm sure the Stones are traveling in big style. And Amos actually, she ended up hiring a chef to go on the road with.
Right, there's been a lot of that.
Do you ever get? Have you ever been asked to do that?
Yeah, except I don't really have the time.
Obviously.
You know, I mean, there's projects like that have always been, you know, interesting to me just because it's something different. But I never have the time to. I never have the time to really do it.
Yeah.
So.
New Orleans. What do we say about New Orleans?
I mean, New Orleans is, you know, look, they have way bigger problems than, like, where they're going to get the next gumbo, of course. However, New Orleans is a place that is so important to the food culture of this country. I mean, there are few places in the country that have a bigger food culture. I mean, etouffee, gumbo, poor boys, muffalettas, oyster loaves. I mean, I'm just rattling off without even thinking about it.
Right.
Those are the things that you get in a place, New Orleans, that you can't get any place else. And they have such a strong food sensibility, and the restaurants and the chefs there are so proud of what they do. I mean, I think that the first thing that you're gonna see, you know, beignets and chicory coffee. I mean, right. You get it in New Orleans. You don't get it anywhere else.
Beignets. Find a beignet in New York.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so, I think that one of the great things about it is that I think that the food culture there is going to help bring New Orleans back, because it's going to drive people there. It's going to create more. It's going to create jobs right away because they have to open the restaurants. And look, you know what? Whether you live in New Orleans or if you're a tourist who is going to go to New Orleans, one of the first things you're going to figure out before you get there is where you're going to eat.
Yeah, you're very, very true.
And so I think that the food thing is an important thing. I mean, think about all the important chefs there. I mean, Paul Prudhomme, Emeril. You know, Emeril's got three restaurants in there alone. Commanders, people from Commander's Palace who've been there for generations.
Yeah.
I mean, they have, you know, they've set the tone in many regards for the way we eat in this country.
And, you know, I always liked Jazz Fest because you always had the mom and pop food stands at the Jazz Fest. You know, if you couldn't get yourself outside of the French Quarter, if you went to the any of those little mom and pop tents had amazing food. What's New Orleans without food?
No, there exactly right. And you know, New Orleans is not the they're not leading the way in you know, making sure that we eat healthfully, but great food.
Well, I went to church last Sunday so I could sing and pray, but something quite unusual happened on that day. My church, it started right on time, just like it does without a doubt. And everything was all just fine, except when it came time to let us out. You know, the preacher, he kept preaching. He told us, I have one more thing to say. Children, before you think of leaving, you better think about the judgment day. Now, everyone got nervous because everyone was hungry too. Everyone was wondering what was the next thing he would do. And the preacher, he kept preaching. He said, now I remind you, if I may, you all better pay attention, or I might decide to preach all day. Now, everyone was getting so hungry. The old one started feeling ill, and one started passing out, and the young ones, they could not sit still, and the preacher's voice rose.
Oh,
I snuck up to the balcony and I crept into the choir. And I begged them, brothers, sisters, help me please. I said, when I give you a signal, I said, when I raise up my hands, won't you please join with me together? Praise the Lord, I have a plan. And the preacher, he kept preaching, long is the struggle hard to fight. And I prayed, Father, please forgive me. And then I stood up and with all my might I sang to the Lord, let praises be. It's time for dinner now, let's go. We got some beans and some good cornbread. Now listen to what the preacher said. Now it's to the Lord, let praises be. It's time for dinner now, let's go. Yes, and I did give a signal. Yes, and I raised up my hands. And then joined with me the choir. Said, every woman, a child, and man, I sang to the Lord, let praises be. It's time for dinner now, let's go. We got some beans and some good cornbread. Now listen to what the preacher said. He stopped preaching, and a hush the church did fill. And then a great white dove from up above landed on the windowsill. And the dove flew down beside him. A fork appeared right in his hand. Everybody watching, the preacher ate that bird right there. And then everyone got really nervous. And preacher, he did start to glow. And as we watched on in disbelief, these were the words he spoke.
And the mama's in the kitchen.
Oh, yes, she is.
She's been there all day. I know she's cooking something good, so let's bow our heads and pray.
Sing to the Lord, let praises be. It's time for dinner now, let's go.
This story,
well,
children, it is plain but true. God knows if a preacher preaches long enough, even he'll get hungry too. And he'll sing
to the Lord, let praises be. It's time for dinner now, let's go. We got some beans and some good cornbread. Now listen to what the preacher says. To the Lord, let praises be. It's time for dinner now.
You know, that's another question I had is, why does good food have to be so fattening?
Because you know what? Cream and butter makes everything taste good. Anybody can cook with cream and butter.
Why is it that, like, you know, you're a very fit chef. Do you really, I mean, your schedule obviously keeps you busy, but how do you balance that? Because you see a lot of chefs, and this is not to knock any of them, but, you know, there's a stereotype that guys are picking and they're, you know, tasting and they're, you know, not getting the exercise in. What do you attribute your...
I exercise.
Yeah.
There's, like, to me, there's no other... I, from my metabolism, if I don't exercise and really, like, I don't really, I mean, I keep an eye on what I eat. However, I mean, I have to eat lots of things. I just get up and run. And it helps my metabolism, my metabolism keep up with my diet. And so it's the only thing that keeps me fit at all.
What's your favorite off-the-beaten-track meal in New York? I mean, maybe you don't want to give this away. There's always that one little place you go, man, I really, or do you have several places? I like the hot dogs here, or the, you know, the lobster bisque here, or
right.
the slice there.
I mean, you know, being from New York, pizza is a big thing to me. I go to this place called Mimi's on 84th and Lex. It was my very first job. I was the delivery boy when I was in the sixth grade.
Wow.
Like after school, you know, after grammar school, I'd go and deliver pizzas. And so, like, to me, that's, like, great pizza. I don't know if it's the best pizza, but it's the pizza that I like because I've been eating it my whole life. I'm not a huge hot dog fan. However, Grace Papaya on 86th Street is, you know, yeah. Again, that's another place. As a kid, I've been eating them all the time, and I get one of those coconut drinks or yep. papaya drinks. And whoever decided that papaya and coconut were hot dogs, but by the way, you can't, like, get out of the way now.
I know.
It's, like, amazing. Yeah. But and, you know, it's like, eat healthfully, have a hot dog.
Right.
I mean, it's like, but it works. I mean, it totally works.
Only in New York would you get that. That's funny. That is very funny, very true. Anything else, Richard?
I was just wondering about what restaurants you like.
In New York?
Yeah.
New York restaurants, I mean, basically hard to go wrong. But, you know, everybody has their favorites. When it comes to sushi, I think that Nobu just, you know, year after year just beats everybody up. It's so delicious. Let's see. I love, you know, for high end.
How about steak frites? French background. Who has the best steak frites?
Consistent
steak frites. You know, you go in there and the fries are going to be right. The steak is going to be, you know, there's never an issue.
Balthazar's got a great energy. I love going to that restaurant.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, is it the best food in New York? I don't know, but it's really good. It's exactly what you're supposed to be getting. And the energy and the way the room feels is amazing. I love going to that restaurant. Even the other one that he has, Pastis, is a favorite of mine. You know, high end, I like Danielle. I mean, I think, you know, he does it better than anybody else. You know, Jean-Georges Vongerichten has great restaurants. I mean, it's just, I could sit here for the next half hour and tell you about all the restaurants.
When you were really working in the kitchen and you guys would get off work, where would you guys go?
Work in the kitchen.
Well, I know, but you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, when you were really slaving.
Oh, Blue Ribbon. We would go to Blue Ribbon afterwards.
Yeah.
But that, we just, you know.
Because it was open late and it was everyone was buddies with Eric.
But we just got drunk and fat doing that. I mean, it was just like, you know, drinking bottles of wine and big, you know, plates of food at 4 yeah. o'clock in the morning every night. I was like, man, we got to get to the gym.
Yeah. Well, you know, you get married, that cuts into that action. That's
exactly.
That action for sure. Well, Bobby, I think you got to get out of here. I know you've got a busy schedule. He's got to go. Where are you going now?
I'm actually doing a piece for CBS Sunday Morning.
All right.
With Charles Osgood. We're doing a story on pizza.
Right. I don't know if it's possible. Maybe we could come in and watch you in the kitchen. One final question before we go, though.
Sure.
What is your favorite meal? You know, like, obviously, cooking for you is cathartic and to get away from it all. What's your favorite thing to do just to cook, to get away from it and say, I'm home, I'm alone?
What do I like to cook the most, you mean?
Yeah.
If I had to sort of dream up sort of the perfect moment, it would probably be a Sunday afternoon. You know, I'm a huge football fan. Or I'm a huge sports fan. So, like, the games are on. I can hear them. But I'm in the kitchen, and I put on, like, some great roast. Maybe, you know, either a prime rib or some pot roast or something along those lines, or even, like, leg of lamb. Something that's going to take a long time.
Right.
And I'm going to put it in the oven and cook it really slowly. And sort of let the whole house smell like the roast for the whole day and then finally get to serve it. I mean, the thing about it, you getting hungry over there? Okay.
We're coming over to the game Sunday.
Well, here's the deal. My favorite day of the year to cook is Thanksgiving.
Okay.
I tell people that I wake up hungry.
Right.
And, you know, at 7 o'clock in the morning, I start cooking the turkeys, you know, and so that's a good day of food.
All right, man. Thanks, Bobby.
My pleasure. Thank
Appreciate
you.
Appreciate it.
When the stars make you drool just like pasta puzzle, that's amore.
That's amore.
When you dance down the street with the cloud at your feet, you're in love. When you walk in a dream, but you know you're not dreaming, signore. Excuse me, but you see, back in old Napoli, that's amore.
Amore,
that's amore.
You've been listening to my interview with celebrity chef Bobby Flay. I'd like to thank today's sponsors, Final Draft, the industry standard scriptwriting software. You can check them out at www.finaldraft.com. And our new sponsor, webhsp.com. For all your web hosting needs, it's webhsp. This is Dusty Wright. Thanks to my engineer, Dave Lee. We'll see you next time on The Culture Catch. Converge is the word.